Hi, I'm Koshin Chris Kane, abbot of the Puget Sound Zen Center on Vashon Island, Washington. We're glad to be able to bring you these podcasts. If you'd like to learn more about our Zen Center, please visit our website at pscc.org. Well, here it is on the last day. We started this journey a few days ago, and I said then, you know, here we go, embarking with good company and some songs and provisions. And the company's still good. Might even be better in some way. And the songs, they're getting better for sure. Definitely coming together. But we're running out of provisions. So we're going to have to step off. End the journey. But you know, this journey of which I speak is only a line segment of a much longer journey. And that path, we can't even see the end of it. It just keeps on going. It looks like maybe forever. That's the kind of path that doesn't have an end. It doesn't have an arrival point. Just keeps going and going. And there are beautiful stops along the way. And, you know, fabulous overlooks and views. And there's also densely wooded parts and puddles and marshy parts and dark, difficult twists and turns. But you never really end. It never really ends. You never really find your final destination on this path. The four great vows are telling us that. So don't dream about a final destination. Don't dream about what that place is going to be like. Up that place of permanent bliss. That place where you got your shit together all the time. You'll just have to content yourself with profound but temporary bliss along the way. That's going to have to be good enough, those blisses. Because the vows tell us that beings are numberless and incredibly varied. And the kleshas, they just keep coming in different forms over and over again. And those dharma gates, you know, they all look a little different, and there's just so many of them. So you and I are going to have to learn to be flexible because of this. And to learn to grow along the way by experience. That's what that tells me. We're going to have to be flexible enough to meet all these things. In Zen, there is not a step-by-step guide that you follow to reach your destination. There is not that kind of guidebook. That's what the vows are telling us. And the Bodhisattva, you know, has to, because things keep coming, We keep meeting people, lots of different types, to assist. The Bodhisattva has to pick up tools to meet all kinds of people, all kinds of situations, get all, through all kinds of gates. Bodhisattva has to have some tools for that. So where does the Bodhisattva pick up those tools? Along the way, on the path. Last year, Wes and I went to Japan, to Kyoto. And along with some others, we walked to a temple that was up in the hills overlooking Kyoto. It was a long, wonderful walk. And there was, at the end of it, was an arhat garden. I think they were arhats. Just hundreds and hundreds of these cute little stone figures that were covered with moss, a lot of them. If you read my blog, you've seen pictures. And they were all different. They were all the arhats are the disciples of the Buddha. And they're often depicted in all kinds of different situations because there's so many different types of arhats, of practitioners, of people. They represent the multitudinousness of people. And but in that temple there was this Kuan Yin Bodhisattva. There's a Kuan Yin right over there that I brought just for this. Kuan Yin is the Bodhisattva of compassion. There's this Kuan Yin in there, golden, that has 108 arms. And in every one of those hands of hers, she has a tool of some kind. She's got a wheel in one, a Buddha statue in another, an arrow, a vial of healing liquid. She's got something in every hand to assist in a different way. She's like a walking Swiss Army knife. And the Bodhisattva has to be ready to meet all kinds of situations. That's what that statue tells us. And is ready to meet all kinds of situations and help in all kinds of ways. And as I say, where did she pick those up? She picked those up, all of those things. She picked them up along the path. That's where she found them. Some of those items you can find anywhere. But some of them, you'll only find in bright and blissful places. And other ones, you'll only find in the dark and gloomy places. You have to go through those to find some of those tools. It's good that the path is long and has lots of twists and turns and varied so that we can pick up all those tools. Find them all so that we can help ourselves and others with them. Leonard Cohen has this beautiful song, one of my very favorites of his, but nobody knows it. It's called A Heart With No Companion. And it is about the Bodhisattva. And the chorus of that song is, he's singing to the captain who doesn't have a ship, who's lost his ship, the woman who can't conceive a child. So it's to the people who are in despair. And he sings, I will greet you from the other side of darkness and despair. From the other side, with a love so deep and so vast and shattered, it will reach you everywhere. That, for me, is exactly the Bodhisattva vow. I will go through that. I will go through that darkness and despair so that through the hills and the valleys, but I won't disappear on the other end. I'll turn back around and I'll send you my love from there. That's been through it. It's been through everything. And that love is vast. That love is so vast and shattered, he says, that it reaches everybody. All kinds of people. That's the Bodhisattva's work. Okay, well, the first vow, as I said before, sets the frame of our practice. We're doing it not just for ourselves, but for everybody else, it says. And the second vow, and Daibi says that that one's needed for us to do a proper job with the first vow, the second one, is a promise that we'll work with our deepest problems, our cravings and our ignorance, these things that keep coming up, the craving to have and to get away from, and our ignorance of our deepest nature. We'll work with that. And that's a lot of that is our practice this weekend. And now we get to the Dharma gates. So what is a Dharma gate? And how are they countless? Because it says there are so many of them. Toray, in his in the reading, says that the Dharma gates are the teaching. Straightforward. And Huineng and Daibi seem to agree. It's the teaching, the Dharma gates. They're different teachings. And there are so many teachings in Buddhism and Zen. For a quiet path like ours, there is a lot of talking when it comes to the Dharma. A lot of words, a lot of ink spilled. Why is that? I have a couple of ideas. I think it's partly because it's a really subtle matter that Buddhism addresses. It's hard to get to. It's hard to get at. And you don't get to it in a straightforward way, always. One of the very earliest sutras that... They figure this is one of the very earliest sutras, or segments of sutras, has the Buddha talking to himself under the Bo tree right after his enlightenment. And he talks to himself like I do. And he says, I think I should stay put here under this tree. Because this matter that I've come to after a lot of hard work, I will remind you, is so subtle and hard to grasp. It's difficult. And if I were to teach it, I might find it too vexing and too tiring, he says. Which I think is hilarious. After all of these like years of austere practice, finally he gets and it's like, yeah, boy, I'm just too tired to talk about it. Yeah, but he does. He gets up, and he does the best he can for 50 years. But it's hard to get it. It's hard to get the essence of it. And also, there's lots of different sorts of people, and the Buddha knew this. And he's going to have to try to reach all of them in a different way, like the Bodhisattva does. And the tradition teaches us that he was known as the great physician, the Buddha, because he was able to treat different ailments in different ways. He had that gift. And so he did his best to address different people in different ways. And that means a lot of talk, a lot of different sutras. And then another thing that I think is true is that we don't have a book. We don't have that Bible. Don't have that one sacred text. So, therefore, the tradition and the teaching just keeps changing. It keeps adding to itself as circumstances change, as cultures change. And you just, gets to a lot. So my advice about the Dharma, about all these Dharma gates, is to take them a little at a time. And not to try to figure everything out all at once, but to let it steep in you, to keep practicing while you learn, and let it work through your body. Don't worry about being a little bit confused from time to time. So I think you could probably spend the rest of your life, you or I, entering all these written Dharma gates. And in the spirit of the vows, I'm going to add a few more for you. Dibby writes that the vows I'm going to devote myself to are training in knowledge and learning. That's what he says. Training in knowledge and learning. And by this, he means more broadly than the Buddhist tradition. And I know this because I've read more of that book by Tori and Dibby. And I'm just going to read from Dibby here. Tori says, great compassion attains to wide knowledge. For great compassion, you need wide knowledge. And Dibby says, wide knowledge here refers to the third of the four great vows. This one. Dharma gates are manifold. I vow to learn them all. In order to fulfill the first vow, like you said in our text, to assist all sentient beings, we need first to work out the inexhaustible passions, and then we have to learn all the wonderful meanings of the manifold Dharma gates of differentiation and to seek wisdom far and wide. All here, as in I vow to learn them all, refers not only to the Buddhist teaching, but means also to become well-versed in the learnings and ways of the world, including the common and the trivial. To know much and to hear much is essential for helping sentient beings. To this purpose, we thoroughly investigate the principle of differentiation and become well acquainted with both extremes, the fine and the coarse of sentient beings and things. So he opens the door there to learn from all kinds of sources, not just necessarily Dharma sources. And I think without getting too distracted, and that can be a problem, I think, but I believe that we should be unafraid to learn from other places in a way that affects our path, our Buddhist path. Like Hakuin, who learned all kinds of things about Pure Land Buddhism and Taoism so that he could teach those things more effectively, teach to those sorts of people more effectively. And when he had Zen sickness, what did he do? He tried, talked to some Buddhists, didn't work, went to a Taoist hermit, yes he did, in a cave, who taught him the butter egg method, which he then taught to many other people. That was not Buddhist, that was Taoist. And when May was talking, I thought about the butter egg method. I'm not going to teach that to you now, but I don't have time. But the point is, we can learn from different places. I think that we do have things to learn from the Western tradition, for instance, the Western religious tradition, our friends in the Jewish and Christian community, for instance, on the island. I've learned a lot from them. And the philosophical tradition too, psychology. All of those things can help this path. We shouldn't be afraid to admit that and to know it. And because we don't have enough gates yet, I also see everyday life as Dharma gates. I really do. I think about that as Dharma gates. So, as filled with Dharma gates. Ways to practice the Dharma. When I'm walking my dog, that's a Dharma gate. When I'm hugging my daughter before she goes to bed, that's a Dharma gate. When I'm meeting a new situation, that's a Dharma gate that I'm supposed to walk through. Enter, fully enter. Rinzai's favorite word, second favorite word after no, is enter. Enter. Enter this situation, enter that situation, don't be afraid. Enter those Dharma gates. Varied, so many. Don't be stuck. In these first three, when I squint, I see the Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha in these first three. The first vow is the Sangha. It's all beings. It's everybody. It's the busy and messy world of everyone. And I sometimes see that as the horizontal axis. I've mentioned that before. I get that from Joseph Campbell, the mythologist, who says this horizontal axis is the axis of humanity, of the human world and human time, regular relative time. The second vow, I see as our Buddha practice, giving up our cravings and growing our knowledge of Buddha nature. And I see that as this, as the vertical axis, together with Campbell. And he calls that the divine axis. You know, that's the axis that when we sit, we just commit to stopping, moving around on the horizontal plane. We get vertical. And that's where we find divine time. That's where we find that different way of being. That's where we find nirvana. This is the samsara axis. This is the nirvana axis. And for Campbell, that's the symbol of the cross. That's the meaning of the cross, the Christian cross. It's the meeting of those two worlds. And Jesus himself, you see, was fully human and fully divine. Embodied both those worlds in his body. He was at home in both worlds, just like the Bodhisattva. Jesus was a Bodhisattva. At home in both of those worlds, in nirvana and samsara, not avoiding either. And he could travel in both widely. I just came from Rome, from Italy last week on my 20th anniversary tour with my honey bunch. And I saw a lot of crosses. A lot of Christian stuff over there. My favorite one was one in the Church of San Clemente, which is a little church. Do you know that one? Yeah. It's the one that has, it's well known because it's got a church, and then underneath the church it's got another church, and then underneath that it's got a shrine, way down where the water, where it's wet, and the water, there's a water running, is the shrine to one of the muses, I think, the old Roman. But it has this beautiful cross. And the cross, that you can't take pictures in the church, but we bought one for my mother because she loves that church. The cross has doves on it, all up and down it. It's covered in doves, flying up and down, side to side. you know, May, they really should be cranes. They should be cranes, but they're doves. They're doves, which is the same meaning, maybe, that they can go all over, both directions, everywhere. And that is our path. That is our path, to know both worlds, both the human and the divine, and to travel deeply and unafraid in both, into both. The Dharma, for me, which is the third one, obviously, the Dharma gates, is to me like a circle. I don't know how to represent it, but it's like a circle that you know, those crosses, those Celtic crosses that have a circle that connects those two worlds. It helps us understand the connection between them and how to work with those two worlds, how they're related. Okay, finally, we get to the last vow. The Buddha's way is unsurpassable. I vow to embody it. Embody it. This Buddha's way is so big, unsurpassable, unattainable, maybe. His shoes are so big. And I vow to step into them and become a Buddha. Become a big Buddha. Like that big Buddha at Nara. The huge Buddha. I didn't go see him, but I've seen pictures. You've seen pictures too. It's the biggest Buddha. And I was taught that Buddha is so big because he contains everything. He contains everything. And that's what we have to do. We have to work toward getting that big, toward containing everything. Containing the human world of suffering and containing the divine world of peace, containing samsara and nirvana within our body, self and no self. I think these vows, these bodhisattva vows, challenge us. They say, your body is bigger than you think. You can pass through more Dharma gates than you think. And you can transform more of your obstacles, of your difficulties than you think. You can dispel more of the ignorance than you think. And you can help more people than you can imagine.
This podcast has been brought to you by the Puget Sound Zen Center. Thanks so much for listening. To learn more about our community, you can visit our website at pszc.org.